button.
If I can do it, then you can too. All the team together and we'll make it through. I've been going solo for all too long, and it's time to move on. ADHDers, 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 ADHDers.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back guys. To ADHD Explorers. I'm your host, Eddie, and we got Ben here.
Hello.
And today we have also the wonderful Rebecca King, aka the ADHD nutritionist. Yeah.
Welcome, yay. Becca.
Thanks
so much for coming on. I really wanted to get you on because I just feel like the information you share online is something that's really niche and really important to ADHDers. Like, I didn't expect how much, like, even our cognitive functioning is affected by, like, what we put in our bodies.
Yeah.
And so that kind of, yeah. So, like, I have endless questions to ask, but I just feel like we've got the holidays coming up and it's a time where we can binge our lives away, eat a lot of refined sugars, which I've been doing Thanksgiving. And I just, maybe we can start there. Like,
all the yummy pies.
I know. What are the pies? Don't get me started. Oh my gosh. What is it about the ADHD thing? What is it about the ADHD thing where there's like, oh, you can eat like not a whole pizza. You can just eat one slice and like, oh, all the pizza is gone. I don't know. What is that? We get just lost in the pizza sometimes, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that all or nothing mindset kicks in.
Yes, exactly. So I've heard a few things. Like, I've heard that maybe it's best for each individual ADHDer what they eat in their bodies, but I've heard like a high protein diet is beneficial for ADHDers. Would you say, what is the truth?
I would agree with that statement. Protein provides like the building blocks for neurotransmitters like dopamine. And I find, because we tend to like sugar because it is a source of dopamine as well, and it tends to be yummy, tasty foods, I find ADHDers often lean more on carbs than protein, so to speak. So it's always interesting to me when I have read literature from like Dr. Hollowell and people who will be like, hey, recommend a high protein diet. But in the dietitian world that I am trained in from, it's not actually a high protein diet. So I'm like, it might be high protein for us, but it's kind of still like what the normal recommendation is.
Oh, okay.
That I see when people will give like the, like, I've seen it in places being like 0.8 to 1 gram of protein per kilogram of body weight. And that's a pretty normal amount that we would recommend for pretty much any adult. But I think higher protein, even higher than that sometimes can be, I find it also helps with fullness. And we can struggle sometimes too with recognizing hunger and fullness. So having enough protein, especially at our meals, can help us actually feel full versus like if you're just eating, you know, a bowl of pasta with some marinara sauce on it, you're probably going to need a lot of pasta to feel full versus if you maybe made a meat sauce or put chicken in there or, you know, another protein that you wanted to use. It can be a little bit more satiating. So
interesting. Talking about fullness, I've heard that there's a delay on the sensation of fullness. Is that something you'd agree with?
I would say yes. And I also find yes and no. I would say I find some of my clients sometimes are very fast eaters. If you're eating really quick, you're all of a sudden fullness catches up with you really fast. And then you're like, whoa.
It like runs in my family.
Yeah. My dad and I are the two fast eaters. And it's like, we'll be done before people are like halfway through their plate. Even my partner, I'll be like pretty much done eating. And he's like barely made a dent in his food. And he's like, how did you eat that so fast? I'm like, how did you eat that so fast? How are you still eating? I don't know. Yeah. How are you still eating? Like, what the heck? So I would say a little bit of a delayedness. I think just we can struggle with interoception. So being able to recognize and act on our body cues. So with hunger, it's usually I'm ravenous, like it's hunger is screaming at you. And I find it's kind of the other end of the spectrum with fullness, where it's a lot easier to tell when you're full, when you're uncomfortably full, but like comfortable fullness is a little bit harder to recognize.
Like satiation. It's just like,
yeah, It's a little, it's a little blip. Yeah, I remember the first time, like, I started actually paying attention to fullness and being like, I mean, I'm not hungry anymore, but I'm not, like, stuffed. And I'm like, is this fullness? I don't know. Like, it'd be very, and then I get in this, like, we're getting this mental game with myself. I'd be like, okay, go do something for a little while. And if, you know, if you still think you're hungry, go back and eat. But, like, chances are it was probably full. So
it's like that same thing with emotions. Like, we learn to identify what we're feeling emotionally by getting more familiar with those sensations. You're saying we can do that for eating too, and be like, oh, is this full, or is this like I'm just craving something?
Am I bored?
Yeah, is there some other feeling that I might be feeling that might be causing me to want to turn to food even? Sometimes those things can come up too. It might not be that I'm bored. It might be that I'm lonely, or I'm anxious, or just stressed. Other things will pop up too. I think if you're kind of approaching hunger similarly to like our emotions of just being curious.
With that, like, interoception struggle, and what are some recommendations you have for, like, not letting it get to that point where you're like hangry and someone is like, have you eaten today? And you're like, oh no, I haven't. Like,
food, what is
recommendations
that?
For those of us who do struggle with the interoception?
A good rule of thumb that I recommend is, like, trying to eat every 3 to 4 hours. Because after that, like, 4 to 5 hour mark is usually when our blood sugar will start to drop. So it's kind of preventing that, and then preventing you from getting to that, like, I need to eat. What's the quickest, fastest thing I can eat right now kind of hunger? It could kind of prevent you from getting there. If you imagine, like, sometimes we'll use a hunger fullness scale for people, and it's trying to kind of stay in that middle of the scale versus letting ourselves get to the extremes. Because if you get overly hungry, it's very likely you're going to eat until you're really, really full most of the time. So trying to kind of stay in there in that 3 to 4 hours. Sometimes you might not really feel hungry, but if you stay in that window, I usually find a lot of my clients don't get to that point of being like ravenous. It doesn't have to be perfect. But
I find it useful to have a snack with me. My go-to snack is like a whole carrot. My friends make fun of me because they're like, you're just eating a whole giant carrot. And I'm like, hey,
I'm eating sugar. It's
so... Before we go deeper, I'd love, I just thought we should introduce you and what you do with your clients and what kind of issues they bring up that are common. I'd love to know that.
Yeah, I am a registered dietitian. I'm also an ADHD, obviously. But I am certified intuitive eating counselor. It's a newer one for me. Wow. So I help a lot of adults, mostly women, that struggle with disordered eating and binge eating disorder, and I use the intuitive eating framework to kind of help them have a healthier relationship with food, and ideally be able to find food freedom is kind of the goal.
Food freedom.
In a brief description, could you tell us what intuitive eating is?
Yeah. So it's a self-care framework around food. And I like to explain it kind of as like removing the shoulds around eating so you can figure out what works best for you so you can feel your best mentally and physically. Because a lot of times we're always trying to find, you know, that one diet, right, that's going to magically fix everything for us. And all those rules often don't work for us and they're hard to stick to. And so being able to figure out those things that do work for us. I think is really nice. So it's a non-diet approach. So I will say, like, the goal of intuitive eating isn't to lose weight or something like that, like a traditional diet. It's just kind of being able to be, like, at peace around food and, you know, being able to not be like, oh my gosh, like, for me, ice cream used to be a food. I used to struggle with binge eating. And so for me, ice cream was one, like, if there was ice cream in the house at some point, I was going to eat it. I would, like, steal my roommate's ice cream and then go to the store the next day and, like, scoop it out, be like, she'll never notice. She totally knew, but she was so sweet and never told anyone.
I had a roommate food stealing problem too. Like, what is it? It's like, it's the forbidden food. Like, you're not supposed to have it. And so then your brain is like, makes it more enticing, right? You're like, I shouldn't be eating my roommate's cereal straight out of the box. But like, here I am at 1 a.m.
Yes. And that's what happens, like, with kids.
And it's so shameful as well. Like, that type of disordered eating. It's like not an eating disorder, but it's disordered eating, right?
Yeah.
And it's, oh, Like,
it's so bad.
The guilt spirals. Yeah. But then when you take away the shame of the food itself, or the like, oh, I can't have that ever, then the want for it goes away.
Yeah. Like, it doesn't mean you're like never going to want it. Like, I still love ice cream and I have ice cream on a pretty regular basis, but it's like, there's days where I can literally have 2 bites of ice cream and I'm good. There's days I don't have any ice cream, and some days there's days I have, you know, I have half a pint.
It's fine.
Yeah, it's fine. But it's not like every time I used to have it, it was like that very much all or nothing kind of mentality with it. Or
I felt like with ADHD, one of the main struggles I find is sometimes cooking a nutritious meal takes a lot of effort and a lot of time.
Yes.
And so we're always looking for little hacks to make life easier and more approachable. Yes. And so I've been just playing around with the air fryer, put some veggies underneath, put some protein on top. And it takes about like 3 minutes prep. And I don't know what you think of that, but it works for me.
I love it. Yeah.
You know?
I'm a big fan. Like, if there's any appliance that an ADHDer can invest in, honestly, the air fryer is like my favorite one, because like the Instant Pot is, that one's always popular, but like there's still a lag time. Like, it'll be like, this is a 10-minute recipe, and then you have to wait for the thing to pressurize, which is way longer than 10 minutes. And then cooks for 10 minutes and you're like, I thought this was a 10 minute meal, and it's like 45 minutes, you know, later you have a meal. So I like the air fryer because it's very instant. I have one that's like an air fryer / toaster oven, which is nice because I can use it for more than one function. But I love mine. You don't have to, you can even cook like frozen veggies. If you're bad with fresh vegetables, you can cook from frozen in the air fryer. So like if you get some broccoli, for instance, and just like throw some frozen broccoli in your air fryer, you can get it all nice and crispy, which is a much better way to eat broccoli than steamed broccoli, in my opinion.
Yeah, steamed vegetables in general, like, such a sensory, like, no.
Yeah, so I can air fry. I love crispy vegetables. I will say, if you don't love vegetables, like crispy vegetables, if you haven't tried them, are worth trying. Seasoning your vegetables, like, make them taste good. Be okay, like using sauces and things like that can be really helpful too. Just like, it doesn't negate the nutrition of them. If anything, it can help us absorb. Like, if you're using a dip that has some fat in it, it'll help us actually absorb the fat-soluble vitamins that are in some of those foods. So like, if you have carrots, for instance, just by itself, not a bad snack, but if you have carrots with like hummus or even ranch, most people be like, ooh, ranch is bad, but like, actually, you're going to get more vitamin A from the carrots and ranch versus just the carrots by itself, because your body can absorb that better. So
Like, no one tells us when we're kids that you're supposed to have vitamin C with your iron, right? Yeah. And it's like 50% times more absorbed when you have them together compared to having them separately. And it's like, why don't we learn this in school? Like, this is literally about our, like, how to make our bodies function well.
Yeah.
So what are those together? Can you give some examples?
It'd be like spinach with, like if you did like a spinach with either bell peppers on top or like a salad.
I do like fried tomatoes with my spinach in the morning, and then tofu on top for the protein. And then it's like on avocado toast. So I'm getting my fat, protein, iron, and vitamin C all in like,
that sounds delicious.
At least I know in my breakfast I'm getting pretty much what I need. My vitamins for the day.
So vitamin C helps iron absorption?
Plant-based sources of iron.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so there's heme iron, which is in like animal proteins, and then non-heme iron. And the non-heme form of iron needs vitamin C to help it absorb better.
Yeah. Wow. So if you're taking like iron tablets, or you're getting it from vegetables, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
As a vegan, you know, I have to know. Actually, that's something I found, like, when I went vegan, I learned more about how those things work, because you have to learn how to like cook again, right?
And you're kind of forced to, because like, you will, it's very easy to get deficiencies if you aren't quite paying attention when you're eating vegan, if you don't really know those things. So
I'd love to ask a little thing about, sorry to interrupt a little bit, but I was just curious, like Dr. Halliwell is always saying that we need a regular sugar, blood sugar level. Mm-hmm. And he's like, you know, you can sip on something of a little bit, it's important to have that glucose level or something. So is there something to be said about having those like long energy releasing foods in the morning? Or
I haven't seen, so it's always funny, I read a study and or I read a snippet, I didn't read the study itself, but I read another what's his name, who writes with Dr. Halliwell a lot, Dr. Barkley. I was reading one of his books from him, and he was talking about how like one group of kids had like a glucose type of drink in the morning, and then one group of kids had cereal with milk in it, and the group that had the glucose kind of drink, they had more inattentive symptoms, and that basically that blood sugar thing. And I was like, and they were trying to basically say something along the lines of sugar. And I was like, no, it makes sense. The cereal and milk, there's some protein in there with that. So like, it's going to make your blood sugar a little bit more stable when you pair protein with your carbs. That's so even if you don't have like the most like complex carbs, which I'm guessing is kind of what you're saying, those like fiber rich carbs, those are going to stay in our bloodstream a little bit longer. There can be like a nice slower curve with our blood sugar versus something that's a more simple carb is going to spike our blood sugar. But if you pair that with fat and protein, it'll slow that curve a little bit better.
My coach, when I was training, my coach would always say, take your, like, have a carb snack, but make sure you have some protein with it so that like it keeps your energy going longer. So
yeah.
That's like cool.
These are juicy nuggets. This is what I'm here for, because I don't know anything about food and ADHD. That's why I wanted to learn.
That's why I guess like a protein shake is probably a good like filler. If you're not like motivated to eat or don't know what to cook, then a protein shake with some like fruit in it, and it's going to be a good like something to get you through.
Yeah, that is one of my like go-tos, is keeping some either protein powder or like a pre-made one if I'm really struggling with executive function. So that way, if there's nothing, like I can sip on that. Like I'm capable of grabbing that out of the fridge and drinking it at a bare minimum. So like, and usually those protein drinks like will have some carbs in it and some, depending on the type that you get, and some fat in there too. So it'll be something, especially if you don't have an appetite, like those kind of things, like, it sounds very counterintuitive to what we hear all the time. It's like, don't drink your calories, so to speak. But like, there are times when you do struggle with appetite.
What was it? Brooke Schnittman was saying that like, what's that beverage that is like a meal replacement? Like her and her whole family just has Soylent that for breakfast.
Oh, Soylent. No, yeah.
Soylent. Like something like that. Yeah. Something one like of that, those. Yeah. And yeah, basically they just have that as their like breakfast because it has all of your nutrients in it, and it's easy, low executive function.
Is there something about, like, I eat like a big bowl of pasta sometimes, not as much anymore, but I get really sleepy after. What is the deal with that? It's definitely a brain fog thing after that.
It's, again, it goes back to that blood sugar thing. So it could be pairing it with something different, or adding some like protein, to that. I find too, like, I like to do, I am not too picky about my pasta. I know some people, if like you are Italian or make homemade pasta, like you probably wouldn't like the gluten-free options, but I will do them because, not from the gluten perspective, but because they tend to have more like protein and fiber in them. So they're just more satiating. So like there's some lentil pasta, chickpea pasta. I can't really tell the difference. Some people can. To me, I can't tell the difference. So sometimes I like to do those because I find they're actually a little bit more satiating.
Yeah, there's actually a brand that came out that has like, I think they put pea protein in the pasta.
Yeah.
So it's like 30 grams of protein in one serving, and you're getting pasta. So you could just put a cheese sauce on that, and you're like, yeah,
you're good to go. Yeah.
I got all my macros.
Yes.
So protein helps because it's like a precursor to dopamine. Did I get that right from you?
That is one piece of it. But it just basically like it helps with slowing down the absorption of the glucose into our bloodstream.
So it keeps that blood sugar level more regulated, more steady. And that's when we get the emotional craziness, right, as well. When we when I have a lot of sugar, I feel like it does have a kind of stimulant effect. I'm not sure what that is. It's kind of, sometimes I pig out on sugars, and I do find it affects my brain a lot, which is, I never knew that.
I mostly just feel like I'm going to puke. I have too much sugar. I sit on the couch and I'm like, oh, I feel horrible about
why did I do this?
The sugar shock, you know, that's a thing, right?
Ooh, that's a good name for it. I've never heard that. But yeah.
Is there anything to be said about like gut health and ADHD?
I would say emerging area of research. I would say in general, a lot of stuff with gut health is in the very baby sciences of things. And so it's one of those areas that's fun and new and exciting. It's very interesting. Like I spent a lot of my, if I had the chance to do stuff related to the microbiome when I was in grad school, I was like, yes, I want to research that because it's fascinating. But it's not quite at the place where we can always make a lot of recommendations yet. So I see like a lot of times there's people talking about gut health stuff, and sometimes it's like we don't know all that information yet, or we're not quite there. So sometimes people will make, so that's why I'm like, I would love to say there's definitely a connection, I would say, because like, I mean, serotonin is partially made in our gut. Our gut is our second brain. So I think there's probably a connection. It just, we don't fully understand the gut yet and all the microbes that live in there, and like which microbes are good and which ones are bad. We have a general idea, but we don't know like everything yet. So I think it'll be an area we'll learn a lot more, hopefully, in the next
I've been on antibiotics for the last little while, and so I'm very like eating all the kimchi and the sauerkraut and like the vegan kefir and like everything. I'm like, please, it helps, like, because if you don't, not a happy gut.
Antibiotics will not make your gut happy, but you need them if you're sick.
So I feel like there's a big thing when, like, for example, if we're on stimulant medication, our appetite just like goes to zero. And I find myself, and I think a lot of others in the community find themselves at the end of the day, they start to get crazy hungry at like 11. And then I stuff my face and then I go to sleep, and then I get all this like acid reflux burn in my throat because my belly was so full. So like, what can we do to like prevent that, would you say?
I would say that 3 to 4 hours, going back to that again, like it will help when your medication wears off too. Like you might not feel hungry on your meds again, but if you're eating while you're taking your meds, even if it's smaller, maybe you can't eat full meals. Maybe you have like smaller frequent snacks or something throughout the day. I call it the hunger monster that comes out when like you haven't really eaten all day, and then your meds wear off and your like brain is looking for dopamine because it's not getting it from your meds anymore. And then your body is like, oh my gosh, you haven't fed me. I need all the food. So eating regularly can help. The other thing that can also help, just if you do eat a lot, if you do end up like overeating or binge eating, trying to not lay down like at least an hour before you go to bed. Even if you maybe lay in bed, but like lay at a, like, you know, prop yourself up a little bit, it'll prevent that acid reflux basically, because when you go lay down, you know, your food isn't, gravity isn't helping kind of pull food down through your gut. So it'll kind of go the other direction if you've eaten a lot. So that can be another tool or thing to think about if you are someone who's prone to reflux, like just trying not to lay all the way flat if you've eaten a lot of food, even maybe going for, if it's not super late at night or something like that, if you want to go for like a light walk afterwards, just to help kind of like get digestion going a little bit. Or something like that can also.
So eat little bits.
I try and do the to avoid the mid like hunger, whatever it is, like relapse. I try and do my like big breakfast in the morning and eat it while I'm taking my meds or before I take my meds, so that at least I know I've got like that. What is it that they say that the Spanish do it like breakfast of a king, lunch of a queen, and then dinner of a pauper. And so it's like, that's the order of like the size of meals that you're supposed to eat. So you're supposed to have like your most food in the morning, and then lunch, and then like a small dinner. Obviously, yeah. Everyone's different. Like, eat how you choose.
Everyone's different, but yeah.
That's the way I like to think of it.
That's a good way of
I think it's so interesting with and ADHD and food.
It's really nice to have a big breakfast.
Yeah. I know. I've always been a breakfast person my whole life. So I've needed a big breakfast always. I have the most executive function then to actually make something. So it turns out.
Where are you going, Vino?
They said, I was just going to say that, like, I really like the idea of intuitive eating. I want to learn a bit more about that now. Like, I'm feeling like if from just my like basic understanding, is it becoming more aware of your body's signals and using that to make decisions?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, there's a lot of, I would say, like, mindfulness aspects to it. Mm. Which is another thing, like, I really like, is it kind of helps you learn a lot more about your body, the messages that you're getting. It helps me, like, I can now, I don't look at it as like, oh my gosh, I'm out of control around food. Like, if I'm feeling like, I can tell if I'm dysregulated, like, am I overstimulated or am I understimulated? Like, I can pick up on those things if I start to notice like how I'm feeling about food. And then I can kind of use other tools instead of like turning to food because of those things or because of emotions or whatever it is. It's just a different approach, I would say.
So it's like your body scanning for emotions and in your gut, and you're taking that into the decision-making process of running your life.
Yes.
Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Okay. So I imagine a lot of what you do is kind of like, I don't want to reduce it just to two words, but like, you're kind of like a food therapist in a way. Like, I'm sure there's a lot of like,
that's what my best trauma. Friend. Yeah. That's what my best friend will call me sometimes. She's also an ADHDer, but that's what she'll be like. She's kind of like, you basically are a food therapist, because it is. A lot of stuff that comes up, like even when you, Addie, when you mentioned the thing about like sugar, when parents are really restrictive with sugar. I have so many clients whose parents were like, okay, sugar is bad. We have to restrict it. We have to have all these rules around it. And then my clients, you know, either in their teen years or when they move out of their house and go off to college, all of a sudden they have all this access to sugar. And now that's all they want. And it's, you know, that thing they finally have access to. And so they're like, now I want to eat all the sugar that I can, or they're past that point in their life. And now they're working with me and they're like, it's just been this thing. I've never learned how to eat because no one taught me that, like, how to just eat a cookie and move on with my day. So now I have to eat six cookies or whatever it is. Or sometimes it's not even that much. Mm-hmm. Just like, I always have to have a lot more sugar because no one has ever taught me that, like, it just adds that extra specialness to it. Yeah.
So this is something I'm quite familiar with in a way. Like, I feel like a lot of ADHDers, we feel these uncomfortable emotions and we go to comforting ourselves, whether that's sometimes with binging Reddit or Instagram or binging food. And so I'd love to, if you could help us understand what that process is to kind of build a better relationship with those comforting behaviors and habits.
Yeah, because I think there can be times where, I think comparing it with social media is great, because there can be times, right, where like getting on social media can be helpful for us. And then there can be times where it's too much, or it's like, it's completely distracting us from what we need to do, you know, all those things. And I think food can kind of be the same way, like where it can be a tool to comfort ourselves, where it might not be like problematic. Like, I remember once I had an ex, and when we broke up, I was like, you know, I'm going to go get ice cream. And I went, I got ice cream with my dog. We had a lovely little date. I knew it wasn't going to fix my, like, how I was feeling, but it was just, you know, like, it made me feel a little bit better in the moment versus being like the girl crying over a breakup with like a whole, you know, a whole carton of ice cream, eating the whole thing. Like, that probably doesn't make her feel very great, where it's like, okay, cool. A little bowl of ice cream isn't going to give me, you know, I'm not going to feel sick afterwards. Whereas like, if you're crying into a whole container of ice cream and eating all of it,
right,
that probably doesn't make you feel as great. So I think recognizing, like, what am I feeling? And can I identify that? What do I need, or what might help with this emotion that I'm feeling? And some of my clients will make like a little visual of like tools that they can use. Kind of like if you've seen the dopamine thing, kind of like that. Just like, what are my other options for emotions? Right. Like, you know, like same thing. Like when I'm feeling X, here's the things I can do. And sometimes we might need like, is there something like, do I need distraction? Do I need to talk to somebody? Do I need to actually maybe work through this emotion in some way, like actually sit with my feelings? Or maybe I need to just do something that's going to make me feel a little bit better. But kind of thinking about like, what do I need right now and what would help? And sometimes food might be that thing. And if so, like enjoy it, like really savor that food, be mindful about it, check in with your fullness. And then other times I might be like, you know what, actually I need to, you know, I think it'd be better if I just called someone instead of, you know, opening up that bag of candy or whatever. That might probably help me more than the food.
I love that you say that, you know, you can still have the food, you know, but just do it mindfully and with an awareness of emotions.
Yeah.
Because we don't have intention to do.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Like, yeah. None of us want to be told what to do, so it's not going to help. But yeah, having like an intention, it being more intentional versus like that, maybe putting a little bit of space between that impulse and action a little bit, of, like checking in, right? Like, ooh, how can
That's so hard. That's like building that space.
It's so hard. It's so hard, but it helps so much when you can. Yeah. Like, and it doesn't happen all the time. There's still times we're going to be impulsive because we're impulsive people. Some of us are. But just putting a little space there to be like, okay, at least I can tell myself I'm eating X because I'm feeling X versus like, why did I eat this? You know, and before you know it, the whole thing's gone and you don't feel great.
So it's kind of learning to be intentional rather than just purely emotionally reactive.
Yeah.
And that pause helps make that better, makes it more intentional on purpose. I love that. And it reminds me of a little bit of like the atomic habits kind of thing, you know, where you you recognize where that habit is coming from. Like, trigger. Am I seeking comfort? Am I trying to ignore something? What am I suppressing? And then you're finding other ways to kind of fulfill that. Or you can still have the food. But I love that you say that there's healthier ways to fulfill that need. And that's what we're really doing by having these addictive behaviors.
Yeah. And that's I even find sometimes we're pushing down the feelings, just the feelings themselves. I find for a lot of my clients, the emotions feel so big and scary, especially if they haven't done therapy or those sorts of things. So they'll turn to food as a way to push down those feelings. And then you're so full that that's all you can think about. And then you feel guilt and shame. So you can kind of be distracted by those emotions versus like what you might actually be feeling.
And it can almost be like a way, like kind of a self-harm behavior, right? Where you're like, I'm going to force myself to eat so I feel uncomfortable, or so that I can feel bad about myself, or so, like these really like self-destructive,
I had a bad day, or you know, so I'm a bad person, so I should make myself feel bad, or I fail, you know, have it, you know, I forgot something, I'm a terrible person because I forgot this meeting or whatever it is, so now I'm just gonna eat. So that's what I think about, is the food, not the the other thing that maybe is the root of it all.
So I'm wondering, on a kind of like related note, what are your recommendations for people who struggle with like rules and restrictions around food? Because that's a big thing for like a lot of people. They're like, can't eat X until I've exercised, can't have like these types of foods. And, you know, like we mentioned before, anything that is restricted, your brain like wants it more. So do you have any recommendations of how to like get rid of some of those rules that we don't even know we have sometimes?
I would say check out the book Intuitive Eating, because it will kind of put put rules into a list for you that you can maybe work through one at a time, or kind of challenge, you know, because it's hard. I would not recommend just like letting go of all of your rules all at once, because that can feel very chaotic and overwhelming. But sometimes just like, if there's a rule that you notice that you are following, that like exploring what like with curiosity, what is this rule? How is this rule helping me? Is it helping me? Is it, you know, causing me just to feel guilt and shame? Is it something that I'm actually like able to keep up with too? Because sometimes there's these rules that we're just constantly trying to do and they maybe don't really serve a good purpose for us. And then we just have an extra mm-hmm. layer of shame because it's like, oh my gosh, I was so bad because I ate carbs. And it's like, that's, it's okay to eat carbs. Like if you don't have to eat low or no carbs, that's, it's perfectly yeah. fine to eat carbs. So it's like, maybe I need to just explore my relationship with carbs and not just try to just constantly be avoiding them. Cause that's again, just mm-hmm. going to make me want all of the carbs, to kind of neutralize those mm. things. So I think getting curious and exploring without judgment, like how those rules, you know, serve or don't serve you, or like, do they limit you with things? Cause I know for me, like I would be like, if I binged, it'd be like, okay, well you can't go hang out with friends and go socialize, which is going to be good for my mental health. But being like, oh, I binged, so you have to spend the night in. And then I probably end up binging again because I'm just sitting around on my couch watching TV. Mm-hmm. So it just happened again and I punished myself. So it was just like, why that rule doesn't serve you to like to do that. So it was an easier rule to let go of because it was like, that's not helping me connect with people and live a fulfilling mm-hmm. life. I can let that go as I'm working on my relationship with food. So many rules that we have that we don't even realize. When I work with my clients, like, oh my God, I keep catching yeah. these rules. And it took me months into intuitive eating where like these little rules I didn't even realize I had would like kind of bubble up to the surface and be like, what, why am I doing that? And then the farther I got along in the process, it was easier to like challenge and let go of those rules. But at first it felt really scary to be like, ooh, like I had a preceptor during my internship bring me like a Starbucks, like I was a white peppermint mocha, I will always remember it. But she brought me a Starbucks drink and I was like, I only drink black coffee then. That's like, that's all I drink. And no drinks with calories. And I remember being like, well, she just bought you a Starbucks. Like you're going to have to drink this because you can't be rude and not drink it. And then it was incredible. And I was like, I don't want this every single day. This is a little too sweet, but I was like, but it's really good. And I like lattes and who knew? Now I have lattes everyone, you know, when I want to versus just only drinking black coffee. I barely drink black coffee now. Mm. But just learning some of those mm-hmm. things of like, oh no, it's not going to be the end of the world. I don't need to always have drinks with calories in it. But like sometimes mm-hmm. it's nice to have a fancy drink and just not feel guilty about it because it's yeah. tasty.
I love
yeah,
that.
Yeah.
So there's no like... So you're against that kind of should and firmness. It's almost like a more self-love, mm-hmm. parental yeah. to self attitude. Like, what is it? I think the Buddha calls it like the middle way, you know,
yes.
not too tight, not too soft. Just like parent yourself, like you're really loving,
yes.
like a really loving mm-hmm. parent. And yes. How you say, sorry, I was just going to say curiosity. I love approaching things. I feel like ADHD is so curious. And I feel like we can really use that to aid our like growth journey and
yeah.
food management journey.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just, yeah. If you try and view like every eating experience as just like an opportunity to learn more about yourself and your body and using curiosity as a way to do that. Like, it's not like a pass fail when you sit down to eat kind of thing. It's just like, let me take information in and like reflect afterwards, like, would I do something differently with this eating experience? Whether it's like how I seasoned the food, where I ate the food, what I was doing while I was eating it, all those kind of things you could kind of think about. And it's not like, oh, I did bad or not. Sometimes I remember once I made food and literally was so glued to my TV and phone that I just finished it and like genuinely thought my dog ate my food. And I was like, I don't even remember eating this. Wow. And then I went back for more food because I didn't remember. And then, you know, halfway through, I'm like, ooh, I'm really full. And it wasn't like, let me beat myself up about it. It was like, okay, note to self, like, if we are going to do something, we probably don't need to be on our phone and watching TV at the same time. Like, that's too many distractions. Does it still happen sometimes? Of course it does, because we're all humans. But most of the time now I'm like, okay, well, pick a screen or have no screens. I like try and listen to something instead, so I'm less distracted, but I still have some sensory input there. But just kind of figuring those things out, I mean, it's not all that. So.
I just had, memory of, you know, you're talking about food curiosity, Ben. I remember one time we were hanging out and you were like, had a digestive biscuit, like a chocolate chip biscuit or something. And you're like, what if I put pate on it?
Oh, Yeah, well, that's intuitive eating, isn't it? Mm.
What will this taste like?
That was weird. I mean, sometimes the curiosity does not work, but you got to try things.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I was going to say there's something to be said about, okay, there was a period of my life where I wasn't mindful at all. I was just purely emotionally reacting, acting on default emotional behaviors. The last few years, I tried really hard to become aware of the sensations of the body as I live my life. And I started to eat and taste food. Like my attention would be on the taste and the texture, and I'd get more immersed in the food. And I thought, wow, there's been so many bites of food in my life that I did not fully experience. And I just wanted to mourn them for a second. Like, wow, all of the flavors I've missed out on because I was just distracted or not paying full attention to the food.
Yeah. And it's so sad. Like, even it's sad when it happens, like, and you finish something that was supposed to be tasty and yummy and you were so in your own world that, like, it's gone and now you're like not even and especially if you don't have more of it, you're like, now it's over and I didn't get so much of it. Like,
it was so fast.
Yeah,
where's the joy?
Yeah,
like, there's something to be said about like the anticipation of cooking something. Like, I know that I can do a lot of quick and easy food preparation. That's what I want most of the time, but there's something to be said about taking time to do something really loving and tasty for yourself. And I feel like eating that, I definitely find myself paying more attention because I'm like, I crafted this and I don't want to miss out on what's in there. Yeah. So I don't know what that's called, but like, I guess it's like mindful eating, would you say?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Really
like putting the energy that you would put into making a meal for someone else or like if you had guests over, but doing it like for you as an act of self-love.
Yeah, I like to have like date nights with myself and make like, put on like, I like to have like Frank Sinatra on in the background or music. Like, unless I'm if I'm making dinner for myself, it's probably that music. But sometimes I'll put on, I like EDM most of the time. So it's either that or Frank Sinatra when I cook. And then just like have like an enjoyable dinner to myself, like plate the food, get to sit and like savor it and enjoy it. But it's all just for me and like, normally I'm more motivated to cook for other people or it's something really quick and easy. And that doesn't happen all the time. That might happen like once a month that I do something like make that really nice meal for myself. But it's just a nice, like, it's that to me is a version of self-care because it is meeting a basic need. Food is a basic need. So it's like, how can I make this just an enjoyable process? I know for not everyone like really enjoys cooking, but sometimes I can get my head in that right headspace to really enjoy it and just kind of like enjoy the whole process of it and then really get to enjoy the food that I've made myself.
Do you do like little forks?
Like, yes, little forks and little spoons.
What is it about that? I feel like it makes it more delicious when you prepare a fork to perfection, the ultimate fork.
Yes.
You know? And then it's like,
such
wow.
a neurodivergent thing to be so specific about your forks.
Yeah.
Yes.
If I put a fork in my mouth and the tines are not aligned, I like immediately
it belongs in the trash at that point if I can't fix it.
Why has it been so wrong?
Yeah. Dude, I find it weird when you get a really deep spoon and the edges are really like, what's
love
with
a deep
spoon? Really deep. I'm talking like a hairy curve. And it just pulls your mouth wide open. You're like, I wasn't ready for this. That is weird. I tell you, it was so sensory.
My mom, it's like, I didn't realize that was a thing. My mom, she doesn't think she's neurodivergent at all, but you know, typical mom. And she'll be like, my whole life I've had to set the table with her having a small fork. Like, whenever I'd set the table, mom always had a small fork, and then eventually I was like, I kind of like the small fork better than the big fork. And then I like started learning, like, oh, small forks and small spoons are like a thing. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, my mom and I were the only ones at the table who would eat with that silverware. But it's just like, always when you set the table, like, we had the small silverware, and then everyone, my sister and my dad had the regular size. Like, it was not a big, like, I'm just, we didn't even think about it. But yeah, it has to be like the right utensil
But I swear it makes it more delicious. Like in the same way that, I don't know if you've ever tried this, but if you get a bit of Coke and put it in a shot glass and just sip it, oh my gosh, does it taste better for some weird reason. I imagine it's the same with mini forks, because you're not like overwhelmed with all the food information, if I can put it that way. You know, it's a little nubbin and you're tasting all of it. And there's lots of room in your mouth.
Get the I'm going to have to go get a can of Coke and try that now.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's just, and it's, I guess that must help with portion sizes. If you have small plates, like my partner always has small plates. And I feel like because we've started to have small plates, my portions aren't outrageous. I had these big plates growing up and we would fill them full and I'd be stuffed silly. And just having a smaller plate has made it more automatic that I put less food on.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. And it doesn't look like there's not as much like space you feel like you need to fill. I have some really pretty plates, but they're massive. And I definitely notice the same. Like I don't eat with them unless it's like a snack, like my girl dinner, but I call it ADHD charcuterie. That's when I would use those plates.
ADHD charcuterie is great where you're like, just chuck all the random things on a plate.
On a plate and it's a meal and I like it.
Some hummus, some cheese. Oh,
this is a thing. I do this, but I didn't know it was a thing. I call it like squirrel food, because it's like little... You're just little snacks, this, olives and this. And
there's no shame in having a charcuterie board for yourself for dinner. Yeah. Like, hey.
The novelty,
I did that
right.
The night before Thanksgiving and it was so good. I had like, and I really enjoyed it. I was like, this is so nice. But yeah, when Girl Dinner came out, the little like TikTok with that. Yeah, I was like, this has been ADHD charcuterie, me and... Bree from Current ADHD Coaching, she was like, we both have called it ADHD charcuterie for forever, and we were like, this really has a name. Like, I get the song, it's good, but like, ADHDers have been doing this forever. Like, I'm glad you guys, the rest of the world,
ADHD
has
ADHD charcuterie.
Yeah, like, I'm glad the rest of you are on the same bandwagon now, and like, you like snack foods for dinner. So
that sounds nice.
So.
I want to hear more ideas of what to put on the ADHD charcuterie.
Ooh.
If you guys have
anything
some.
And everything.
Ooh.
Yeah, olives, hummus, carrot sticks. I got my vegan salami. just like when I get a fancy vegan cheese and then I'll cut a slice out, I'm like, look at this. Yeah. This is $12 worth of cheese in one spoon.
I'm trying to think, what else do I put on here sometimes? Like pickled vegetables can be really yummy.
I think that's what I feel more guilty about than the actual food itself, is like how much it costs. I'm like, I just ate $15 worth of food, one bite. Because I live in Canada.
Yeah. Food is wicked expensive.
I have some questions from the community, if you are happy to get into those. So I love this one. How am I supposed to come up with something different to eat 2 times plus a day for the rest of my days?
Yes.
If you can automate some of your eating, like, or have options within those meals,
I have the same breakfast.
Yeah. I eat pretty much some version of toast with a fried egg and then either like avocado. Sometimes I'll do cottage cheese because if my avocados aren't ready, that might sound weird on toast, but I like it. Other things, like that's like, I have some version of that every morning. Mm-hmm. And then lunch, I usually either have leftovers or a salad. My snacks, at least during my work week, are a little bit more automated too. Like I have a couple things I could kind of pick through. And so I just have them all in a basket and kind of pick what sounds good then. And then dinner for me is like the one where there's more variety, or kind of switch it up on a more regular basis. And that just, and then the weekends I don't really plan. I just kind of end up eating out or doing whatever. So it makes it a little bit easier. But yeah, if you can automate it, like, so that there's just less thinking involved, like what are some types of lunches I like? Can I rotate through them? Or if there's like something you can make multiple versions of, like if you like wraps, there's a million ways you can make wraps. So like, can you do that for sandwiches, salads, the same thing. There's a million different versions of those things you can make. So like, you can kind of tweak it to your preferences and switch it up and make it a little bit easier.
I love the idea. So you're limiting your decision making. And you've got like preset things for breakfast, lunch, and then dinner is the one you can put more effort into.
Mm-hmm.
Wow, that's really golden. I haven't really thought of that lingo before, automating your food, but I can totally see how that makes sense.
Yeah. Basically, have a menu. Like, what are my lunch options of the things that I can eat? And like, you don't have to have five different, you know, there's, let's say you have lunch every day, so seven meals. You don't have to have seven different lunches. You can rotate through things and still find ways to get variety and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I want to hear that again. So you, for lunch, you say you have some leftovers sometimes or something. You have a few things that you can do.
Yeah. Like for me, salad with chicken is something I can make like that. Mm. So I'll do that. Leftovers, because I can reheat them. Sometimes I'll just do, if I've gotten hyper-focused and forgotten, I'm like, oh gosh, I need to eat. I'll just basically take a bunch of snacks and eat them. It's like, that's my
I have my instant noodles, and then I can just change what I put on top of it. So I'll like fry vegetables or tofu or like fake meat. And then you're adding, I think, what's her name? Eating with ADHD, Nicole.
Yeah.
She called it adding in.
Yes.
So it's like the opposite of like the restriction. You're like, okay, well, this is a pretty nutritionless meal, instant noodles.
What can I add?
But I can add in broccoli or carrots or like tofu to make this more nutritious.
Yeah.
But it's still low executive function.
Yes. Yeah. There's another dietitian, and I don't remember her name. She's coined the term like eat what you want, but add what you need. And I would like that that mindset of like, what do I want
I love
and
that.
What can I add to it to maybe
nutritional yeast to everything.
Yeah.
It's such a vegan thing.
I really like the idea that you got like a kind of like baseline foundational things you have for breakfast too. Like you said, avocado toast.
Makes grocery shopping super easy too, because I buy pretty much the same things for those meals. So when those things are low, it's easy for me to tell, because it's not like, oh, I need to go find a new breakfast to make or a new recipe or a new thing and have to like go buy new ingredients, because it's like stuff I buy so every week. So I kind of know what to expect too. So that's
that's
nice. Oh, overnight oats are the other one. That's my like quick need.
That's a good one, because it's it's like
Someone actually asked any tips for a quick healthy breakfast. So on that note, I guess overnight oats, because you can
overnight oats. Sometimes you can buy them.
I
now
have more
too.
Energy at night.
Yeah, it literally takes 5 seconds. And really hard to mess up, because you just put it, get a mason jar, shake it up, and put it in your fridge. If you forget about it, they last a couple days too. So like, it'll be there for another breakfast later this week. They even make cups now that are like. You can get from the store that are like pre-made overnight oats. So if like you're really struggling, those are a good option. I still have to add like a little bit of, I usually add some fruit and nut butter to it, because it's not, I find, enough on its own to be a meal for me. Like a protein drink and a piece of fruit, it's another super low executive function kind of breakfast. Frozen fruit, or not frozen fruit, but like smoothies are something some people can do in the morning if you have enough executive function to do. That's kind of quick. Trying to think. What I was saying frozen for. Like frozen breakfast sandwiches. You can either, if you like prepping, you can prep your own in advance and freeze them. Like you can do frozen breakfast burritos or frozen breakfast sandwiches and then heat them up and eat them. Or you can buy frozen ones from the store if you don't want to do prepping.
Mm-hmm. When I know I have to be up early and like if like stupid early because we're going somewhere, then I will get one of those, because it's literally like throw it in the microwave while I make my coffee or do something else. And then it's like I have a hot breakfast. And
yes. I used
They're maybe not the healthiest, but like whatever. It's good. It's in my face.
Yeah. When I'm like really, I'm a time sensitive thing. Like those little, like those are good like backups to have. I also keep some frozen meals like just as backups if I don't have like any executive function of like what can I heat up. I'm a big fan of Trader Joe's and Aldi, but I will keep one or two frozen meals from there that I can just heat up and eat. Sometimes I might add like some, we have a really good one right now at Trader Joe's. It's like a verde chili chicken and rice. rice and cheese, and it's really good. But sometimes I'll add a little extra cheese, or like if I have avocado, I'll put that on top, or some salsa or something, just to add like something a little fresh to it. And that's really good. If you struggle with making avocado toast, you can also find the cup. There's some cups of like mashed avocado that you can just use to like spread, so you don't have to mash it up yourself. I have used those during seasons of life when I still liked avocado toast, but I couldn't get myself to mash it up, or the avocados were just really inconsistent. And I was like, all right, I'm just getting these because I really want my avocado toast, but the avocados have been really hit or miss. So those are kind of another good option.
I buy bananas just to ripen my avocados so that then like they sit next to them, and then I'll use them like for banana bread or smoothies. So not only like I'm not just wasting these bananas. But my friend was like, that's like the most first world thing ever. Like, hey, it works.
Trying to think, there's some other ones you could do too. Tomatoes, if you put them by avocados, those will help ripen them too.
Oh, they also help with the ripening?
Yeah. If you, I'd Google like ethylene gas producing like fruits or produce, and you can find bananas aren't the only ones. There's a couple other ones, but bananas are like the strongest.
But then it forces me to occasionally have a banana in my smoothie and get some potassium.
Yeah. I like to freeze. I will freeze them right before they get too browned. And then I'll use them in a smoothie. So then they don't go to waste.
That's good.
Someone else is asking, what would be a good and healthy replacement for sugary cravings?
Ooh. Well, I think the better question would be to investigate why you're having sugar cravings. because like we mentioned with the restriction, like if you are craving sugar for whatever reason and just keep pushing off the craving, it will just keep growing and growing and growing until you finally have sugar, and you have a lot of sugar usually. So I think exploring why, like if you're restricting carbs or not eating enough carbs, we can crave sugar because sugar is the quickest, fastest source of energy and carbs. So that's why we crave that one. Or it could be like we've touched on like emotions or other reasons like needing stimulation. If you feel like it's just out of boredom or like you need something to do with your hands or your mouth, exploring some other things you can do that might satisfy that. Like I have some clients who really like the chewable jewelry. Sometimes like, I just want to chew on like that really gummy candy or whatever, like the jewelry. They're like, that actually can satisfy that need, or gum. I will put a caveat. You can develop jaw issues if you chew too much gum, so just be mindful of that. But some of those things, like if you're genuinely hungry, like don't use them as a tool to restrict because it won't help. But like if you know it's just like dopamine, like I always have fidgets on my coffee table because there'll be times I've just finished eating dinner and then I'm like, I'm going to go get something to eat. And I'm like, you literally just ate. I know I'm not hungry. My brain is looking for dopamine. So I will pick up something and just playing with it gives me enough. Like something to do while I watch TV because I often just can't sit and watch TV. So
that's great.
Having that other thing.
So if you're craving stimulation, if you feel like that's the core of your craving, just, hey, chew on something. That's a really cool like outlet for it that's a bit healthier.
Yeah. And like, and again, if you're hungry, please go eat something. But like, if not, like, go find some other things. Some people, you know, even going for like a walk or something to get, that's going to give you a big burst of dopamine doing physical activity in some kind of way. So doing some that you enjoy would give you even more of that. Even like having like a little dance party in your living room or something like that could be, you know, a fun way to get a little burst of dopamine.
Yes.
Yeah. And see,
I love that.
See how you're feeling afterwards.
I'm not sure if there's one specific answer for this question. It's, what is the most important food to keep in my diet regularly?
Ooh, I don't, that's a good, like one food, that's hard to pick. I would say to keep in your diet, honestly, this is going to sound very different, but something that you enjoy, whatever it is, like a food that brings you enjoyment and satisfaction, because that is like the mental piece of fullness and satisfaction. Or that's how I like to think of it. So like if you're only eating like, let's say like super healthy food that's not very tasty, like I always think like if someone's like doing a diet of like brown rice with steamed broccoli and like baked chicken with like maybe just salt and pepper, like not very seasoned or tasty at all. Like
it sounds like the bodybuilder diet.
Yeah, like that kind of diet. Like that's what I imagine. Like, and people will be like, why do I keep binging on food after this? Like I ate, I should be full. It's like, well, there's nothing. Your brain wants something that's, you know, satisfying. So having something to like help you stay mentally full in a way, or thinking about it that way. Mm. So if food's not satisfying, you'll keep eating. Like, you'll just keep eating
most days. Yeah, and we'll have like a piece of chocolate or just some chocolate, because chocolate is really like satiating. Like you can suck on it or like dip it in your tea, and it's like, yeah, that like there's something about cocoa, and this apparently something I think it's like especially women, we crave chocolate on a period, because if you have actually like cocoa nibs, it has iron in it.
Yeah, and magnesium. So
I guess that's another thing. It'd be like, am I craving actually chocolate, or am I too craving?
Yeah,
iron?
Where am I at in my cycle? If you, if you have a menstrual cycle, that'd be another thing to think about, is where you're at in your cycle, or tracking your cycle and your cravings, and you can probably map out and notice a pattern between those.
And if I'm coming up to my period, I'm just like, I'm gonna eat a whole block of chocolate. I deserve it now, because my body's gonna go through.
That phase is when our, like, I'm sure you've probably talked about it in other episodes, but yeah, like that luteal phase, or weeks leading up to our actual period, our estrogen levels drop then, and estrogen and dopamine are connected. So our dopamine levels drop even lower than what they already are at. Right. So we are especially tend to have more severe premenstrual symptoms than neurotypicals who don't have a menstrual cycle. So,
Someone else is asking to stay hydrated. Could it be a good idea to drink infused water, teas, or fruit flavored water?
Absolutely. Yes.
However you get the water in your body.
Yes. Yeah. Like if you need to add flavor enhancers in there, so it means you're drinking water, like go for it. If you need to infuse fruit in there, go for it. Carbonated water is something you can also, I like a little fizz. So like drinking carbonated water I find helps. I know it might not be the best for your teeth to drink it all the time. But it is a nice way, like if you need the fizz, if you're trying to move away from maybe drinking soda and you want something that's more hydrating, carbonated water can be a good alternative. But yeah, that helps you drink water. I also would say, like, think about the container you drink in, having like a bottle that you really like. If you like drinking with a straw or not with a straw, like a lot of my clients are very specific with the type of cup that they have or that they can drink out of. So thinking about some of those things too, of like, can really make a difference.
I love that. Making it like, it's almost like journaling. I always recommend to get a really nice pen, get a really nice book. And so you want to do it. And you're saying
that.
Yeah, you
want to sit down and write and like, feel that, like feel the pen going across the paper and like this is satisfying versus, it's the same thing. Like I have, it's the weirdest thing. Like this cup I got from a restaurant, I could drink water from it all day long. I have a nice, really nice stainless steel water bottle. And because the mouth hole is too small on the lid, I can't drink it fast enough. So I end up not drinking enough water during the day. But this free cup that I got with a meal once, I can drink water out of that all day long.
I love that.
That's funny. I feel like I almost have the opposite problem, that like if it's too big, I just spill on myself.
Same.
You want to hear my weird tip? Is I have loved going to 7-Eleven and getting those big zero calorie sodas. But now the thing I love to drink water out of the most is those big paper cups with the straw. I feel like I'm at a restaurant. I feel like it's a good time. I put cold water in and I drink it so quick. It's crazy. Just the use of a straw, and I'm like, oh, I'm on holiday or something. I don't know. I just get so hydrated. It's so funny. But then they leak because they're paper cups. But damn, I stay hydrated for that time.
Yeah. That's
wow, I love that question.
Another question is, what supplement can I take, as foods are hit and miss depending on expectations? So making sure you're getting your micros.
Yeah, your micros in. A multivitamin is usually like a safe bet. If you are someone who really struggles with like your intake, a multivitamin is probably good just to cover the bases. I'd probably also, like, if you really do struggle with getting in enough fruits and vegetables and eating variety, like having your doctor do your blood work to make sure you aren't deficient in any minerals or vitamins would be something else I'd ask, like at your physical, like at least in the US, if you have health insurance, you usually get one physical a year. So like you can always ask for them to do that, or like let your doctor know, like, hey, I don't eat a lot of, you know, fruit. I'm trying to eat more fruits and vegetables, but I really struggle with it, or I have sensory issues with food. Like, can I make sure that like I'm not deficient in anything? Definitely be something that's worth checking, because a lot of those things, if you're deficient, might make your symptoms worse with ADHD. So.
Oh yeah, you're like, why am I so tired all the time? Like, oh, I'm not getting enough.
I'm anemic. Imagine that.
I'm gonna take some multivitamins.
I will say, you might want to say, if you do take a stimulant, an amphetamine-based stimulant, taking large amounts of vitamin C within like an hour before and after can make your meds less effective. Most multivitamins shouldn't have enough in them to really interfere with it. But if you feel like your multivitamin is, just take it in the evening. It won't make a difference if you take it in the morning.
I was curious about that because, like I said, I have my like my spinach and fried tomato and on toast with my tofu. So then I'm like, oh, it's got protein, so it's a good time to take my meds because protein helps your meds absorb. So the vitamin C that's in that tomato is probably like enough to help absorb the iron, but probably not too much to like interfere with my meds.
Yeah. So like it's really hard to figure out because I find different things everywhere. But in my, I have a little med interaction book, and that one says to avoid like mega doses of vitamin C, which would be like what you get in like
when like the specific vitamin C tablets, so, like, it's like 1,000 micrograms or whatever.
Those will definitely interact, but like a little bit of tomatoes. I've seen it in Facebook groups too. I'm in like sometimes I'm just kind of lurking in them, and I've seen someone be like, oh my gosh, I have a smoothie every morning. Now I can't have that. And it's like, even if you had the most vitamin C rich fruits, it's really hard to get to 2000 milligrams via food in one sitting.
Okay.
Like, it's really hard. Like you'd have to get to like, I did the math once, red bell peppers have like some of the most vitamin C, and you'd have to have like 13 cups of chopped bell peppers in a sitting to get to that. Okay. And like, I don't know any person that's eating that much bell peppers in one, red bell peppers at all in one sitting. So like, you're probably good. But if you take an immune supplement, definitely like wait outside that window to take it as well.
That's funny. That's so really I don't need to worry that my smoothie had 5 strawberries in it.
Yeah. Like. Oh my gosh. I used to take emergency every morning. And then one day in my grad school, I was like flipping through my book. I was like, let's see what my meds interact with. And then I was like, oh my gosh, this is why my afternoon meds work 10 times better, because I just wasn't absorbing my medication in the morning, because I'd take my meds with an every morning I'd take emergency and take my meds. And I was like, no wonder. My afternoon was like, I was like, man, my meds just work so much better. Reading that, I was like, why did no one, I'd been on my Adderall for like 5 years and no one had told me that this interaction existed. And I was like,
be on the box. What?
Yeah, it should like, and it's hard sometimes to find like good, reliable information with it too. Like you can go, like I've had to go into the like pamphlets they give you for the medications to figure out like what is true or not, because I've seen different things.
I swear
they
like
places.
Even when I get my meds, like the sheet they give you doesn't say anything about that. Like you shouldn't be taking this with vitamin C. It's like when you get, you know, your antibiotics, sometimes they'll say like don't take this with calcium or whatever it is. But like a lot of the drugs don't have stuff about like, you know,
I always go check. I
do
a
Google
now.
Yeah,
I go like there's it's not GoodRx, but there's another like drug interaction like website you can kind of go search just to double check, because there are times when they're like, this doesn't interact, and then I'm like, oh, this does interact with something else we take. Like that would be nice to know. So
especially like now in winter, I'm taking my vitamin D and K because seasonal depression.
Yes.
Wow.
Especially living in Canada.
Another person just wrote, it's not necessarily a question, they just wrote irritable bowel syndrome versus ADHD. Is there an overlap?
They said, I've got some thoughts on it. Is some people say that the more stress you have in your life, the more those kind of things seem to happen.
Yes.
Oh, from the inflammation. For sure. Stress.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, again, that second brain area, I could see. I definitely have a lot of clients that have that. Mm. So I could say, I think if you're probably more stressed, if you're not eating on a regular schedule either, like, and eating enough, like if you're having especially that like cycle of not eating all day and then eating a large amount of food at night, like your gut's not gonna feel great. Like it just, it's just not. So
it's like, oh.
Yeah, like, and I've seen research where it's like if you binge eat at night, like the next day you are gonna have more like abdominal discomfort. People are less productive at work. I'm like, yeah, because you like are gonna have to go to the bathroom maybe more often. Or you're constipated, or you just don't feel good because of that. So I think, yeah, noticing that, I don't think IBS causes ADHD or ADHD necessarily causes IBS. But if you're definitely dealing with a lot of unmanaged stress, it's very likely that it can show up, like impacting your gut. So
wow.
And then related to that schedule, you said like eating on a schedule is helpful. Like someone just said, how do I make schedule and stick to it?
I use my meals as like my anchor point for my routines in my day, and using that as like, those are non-negotiables. Eating is a non-negotiable for me. Like it has to happen before other things happen in my day. I pair eating like my a.m. and p.m. meds with breakfast and lunch, so like I know that I'm going to take my meds and I know that I'm going to eat two meals. So that kind of takes care of those things. I would highly recommend if you really struggle with routines and schedules, like investing in an ADHD coach might be something worth your while, or exploring some of their, you know, an ADHD coach's resources with like schedules and routines. Because like when I started my practice in 2020, I started working with Brooke because I was like, I can show up to my client calls, but like, not letting my impulsivity take over when I need to like go do admin work and go do all the like not exciting things that my brain likes to do. I'd be like, I'm going to go to the pool. And it's like, no, you still have stuff you got to go do. So I think working with Brooke was really helpful for me to like, it was really helpful with learning how to stick to like routines and schedules to like help myself. So I didn't feel like I was constantly just behind. Mm-hmm.
I like that idea of like linking it to things you already do. So you said you like take your meds when you have breakfast, but I guess if it's like you're struggling to have breakfast, like have breakfast when you do X or you know, like I take my dog for a walk pretty much every day at lunchtime. And so it's like, I get back from my walk, I have my lunch, like they're kind
that's
of
how
linked.
My breakfast
and
is.
My dog will make a big deal if she doesn't get let out, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's how my breakfast is. Like I walk my dog and then we get back and I make breakfast. And I do find that for whatever reason, sometimes just leaving, like even just to go take my dogs out in the evening when I'm done with work, like just taking, I have one dog that I walk and the other two are just really small and don't like walks. So we'll go to the dog park and I'll just take them out to go to the bathroom. And like, even that little going outside and change of scenery, I can come back and like actually make myself a meal or like go do other things versus like, I just plop right down on the couch and then I don't move the rest of the evening. Maybe focus on building like one breakfast or one meal first, like into your routine, and start with one meal versus trying to focus on all of them.
Do it all at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's really interesting. Like as someone that like, I seem to miss breakfast a lot. Is that something I should think about growing an awareness around?
Yeah, especially if you find you get really hungry around 11 p.m. It might be worth
yes I think I do. You're telepathic. You're like, you may get hungry at 11 a.m. maybe have an awareness of that. I'm like, yes, yeah. I do.
Yeah, sometimes it'll like blip on our radar. We're like, oh, I'm hungry, I could eat, and then we're like, let me finish one thing, and then you know all of a sudden it's 2 p.m. and you're like, oh, breakfast.
Yeah. Why do I have a headache?
Yeah, why do
that will help. So that helps the regularity again, I imagine. So this is the middle goal is to just like keep that blood sugar level. Eat regularly. Be kind to yourself.
Yeah, you mean regularity, like
it will help with that too.
I was like, it will help with that.
Wow, that's so good. I've been learning so much. Are there more questions, Addie, from the community? Oh, she's hydrating.
I think there are a few, but they've mostly covered other topics that we touched on already. So nice. I think we've covered a lot of bases.
Yeah.
We did. Awesome. I hope you found this, listeners, I hope you found this really, really useful. I know I have. It's given me a lot to reflect upon. So, Becca, do you want to let the people know where they can find you and your resources?
Yes. Yeah, I'm most active on Instagram. So you can find me at ADHD.nutritionist there. I'm also on Facebook too. I have a TikTok, but I don't use it. So if you follow me there, you won't really see any content.
cool. We'll do it anyway.
And I can link an article, or I can send you guys an article if you want to link it for people. It's kind of like how to adapt intuitive eating. It's from another dietitian, but for folks who maybe are familiar with intuitive eating and are like, I can't do intuitive eating, I think that article could be helpful of like how to tweak some of intuitive eating to work for our brains. Cause I think sometimes people are like, oh, I've tried it, and they've probably tried it from a more neurotypical lens than approaching it from an ADHD lens. Cause I've had clients who have tried intuitive eating and then they come work with me and they're like, oh wait, I can actually do this. But they felt like they couldn't because they were trying to do it in a more neurotypical way.
That's fantastic. Mm. We'll put it in the show notes. And if you have any more things that you'd like help with ADHD, we make resources at ADHDoers.com. Remember to share this with your friends.
We have a cookbook.
Yes. Yeah, we do have a cookbook that you helped us make, right? I swear it's your one. Yeah.
I think I looked over some of the recipes. I remember correctly.
So it's a bunch of helpful recipes made by Becca, and it's super fast to prepare. That's in part of the Everything Bundle. And so it's all by donation. Like, we just want to help people. Like, here at ADHDers, we're just a big bunch of ADHDers that feel like we wanted to create the things that we wanted to see in the world and make it as accessible as we can. So that's all at ADHDers.com. Send this to someone that you feel like it can help, and remember to rate us really nice, and we love you very much. So have a great time, and thanks very much, Becca.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Big love, and remember to celebrate your wins, everybody. Celebrate your wins. Lots of love. Bye-bye.